have representatives of the Housing Executive here in the chamber, and we'll get them to introduce themselves in a few minutes. But we have no chair tonight for the meeting, as our chair and vice chair are both on leave. So I'm asking just from the floor for a proposer and seconder to chair the meeting. Councillor Lewis is proposing Councillor Hanlon, who's in the chamber. Is anybody content to second that? And Councillor Jackson second, and that, is everybody okay? Yep, okay, so I'm going to hand over to Councillor Hanlon then.
Hey, good evening everybody, and you're very welcome to the Housing Executive Special Council meeting. Do we have any apologies this evening?
Yeah, we have apologies from Councillors Gibbons, Hart and Sharvin.
Gibbons, Councillor Hart and Councillor Sharvin. Sorry?
Apologies from Councillor Devlin.
Oh, Councillor Devlin. Yes, Councillor McMurray.
Yeah, just apologies, Chair, for Lee Surgeoner, Councillor Lee Surgeoner and Councillor Enright, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
And, sorry, apologies for Councillor Henry Rayleigh and Councillor Glenhanna, please.
No bother. Okay, thank you. Any declarations of interest? No? Okay. So, as I said, the Housing Executive team are here this evening to present the Housing Investment Plan. So we have Grania Long, the Chief Executive, John McCartan, Regional Manager, Liam Gunn, Area Manager, and Sinead Collins, Head of Place Shaping in South. So I'll hand over to Grania to go through the presentation.
Good afternoon, good evening everyone, and thank you for the opportunity to present this evening and the opportunity to present on our housing investment plan to those of you in person and those online and with a number of colleagues. I think what I'll do is, just in the interest of time, is to present first and then I'll introduce colleagues, because obviously I'm sure we have plenty of questions to cover. So as has been said, I'm Grania Long, I'm the Chief Executive at the Northern Ireland Housing Executive. Our housing investment plans documents are really, really important documents from our perspective. It gives us the opportunity to present to councils and to outline, first of all, the scale of the investment in housing across the council area, how we spend that investment, how we ensure that we're meeting the needs of tenants and households across the council area, but also, really importantly, how we work with you as a community planning partner. That's incredibly important to us. We are a statutory community planning partner, but most importantly, we're working together in partnership with you as council in the interests of people locally. So I'm very happy and grateful for everyone's time this evening. I'm very happy to present just a few slides outlining the work that we're doing in partnership with you. And then, as I say, we'll come on to questions. So let me just get the clicker so this works. Yeah, perfect. In terms of community planning, I mean, I think it's obvious, and I'm sure, and I hope you see this locally, we are and take our responsibilities to you and to this council extremely seriously as a partner of yours. We obviously attend the quarterly strategic partnership board meetings. We take a lead role on the community planning priority, access to quality housing, and we chair the housing needs working group. So we work in partnership with colleagues, both officers and elected members. You'll be aware, some of you, that we held jointly a number of conferences recently in 2019 and 2021, and that led to a housing action plan for the district. And what I should say is that's quite unique. So while we work with all 11 councils, I have to say, and I'm not just saying it because I'm in this room, but actually I think what you've seen is, you know, really productive partnership looking at how we increase housing supply locally, how we meet needs. And I'm very grateful, and I know my colleagues are too, to the partnership and the ongoing work that we've been undertaking with officers and with elected members locally to ensure that we do meet housing need. And there's a huge level of demand, and the gap between demand and supply we know is too wide, so a huge amount of work ongoing. So that housing needs working group put together the action plan, and that's currently has been reviewed with the intention of producing an updated plan, and that'll be published this year. But you know, all of the issues that I'm sure I'll talk about will be, you know, are the focus of the plan. In particular, promoting town and city living, addressing rural housing need, and all of the things that we need to do to bring the level of sites forward to enable us to add to new supply, particularly in terms of new social housing supply. We also take a lead role in the ongoing housing-led regeneration project and that particular project at North Street Flats in Uri, which many of you will be well aware of. So I will just start, I suppose, very briefly by reminding or just giving an overview of the kind of the scale and the nature of our work locally. So the 10-year breakdown across the council area, 68,000 households, and you can see the split between owner occupation and then private rented, which is a very large proportion of 20%, and then obviously social rented making up 10%. And of that 10% social, the housing executive itself as a landlord manages just over 5,000 homes locally, and many of you will know our local teams who work really well and really effectively with you. I thought I would give an overview also of the level of spend. So you'll see in the last year, 22-23, has executive invested just over 100 million in the council area across a range of areas of focus. Obviously, 38 million in housing benefit. That ensures households that require help with their housing costs have those costs met. You'll also be aware for many households, the gap between housing benefit and what they require is too large. And we are working very closely, through our housing benefit teams on discretionary housing payments and ensuring that where households qualify, that we can make discretionary housing payments available. I think the theme for this evening, you won't be surprised to hear me say this, is budgets are extremely tight. But nevertheless, to be able to ensure £38 million worth of spend in the last year, I think shows just the level of demand locally for stock for housing across all 10 years. As a landlord then, and as a strategic housing authority, we spent just over £66 million in council across the council area, and much of that, £37 million, was in new build social housing. So that's the capital programme, the social housing development programme, which I'll talk about later on. But you'll see also then the range of other programmes, affordable warmth and boiler replacement, which I'll want to talk about. Our investment in our own stock of just over £11 million, and that is a huge priority for us. We spent across Northern Ireland, we spent more in our homes last year than we have in any other previous year since 2007. So we are ramping up investment in our stock, as we should do. But that is, there are a huge amount of challenges with that. As many of you will know, the contracting environment has been extremely challenging. Even in the 12 months since I was with you last, I don't think we could have foreseen some of the challenges that were going to come to play and have had an impact on the extent to which we're able to get programmes delivered, quite frankly. And so we will continue to see that as a major challenge in this year and next year and possibly for a number of years to come. We're still seeing the impact of inflation. We're still seeing the impact of the cost, rising costs in terms of inhibiting delivery, but we'll come on to that. So in terms of this year and this forthcoming year, you'll be very aware, because you've seen these presentations before, that 26.59 million doesn't include the costs associated with the social housing development programme. We always do that retrospectively. So you will assume a level of spend, obviously, in capital new build, which again I'll come on to. But by and large, again, a healthy programme in a number of areas. Our planned maintenance investment maintained at over 10 million, just shy of the 11 million from last year. But again, generally speaking, across the piece, everything that we can do to ensure that we continue to invest on all of those range programmes, we will do and we will continue to do in this year. On the strategic side, and I'm not saying anything that you're not either already aware of or that we're all kind of living through, is the fact that both on the capital side for our grants, we have seen a significant reduction in a number of programmes and we've had to, for example, suspend the boiler replacement programme. We submitted a bid for capital funding for that this year. We didn't receive that funding. And we also feel that the impact for capital spend will also impact on our affordable warmth programme this year. We can talk a little bit about that, I'm sure, in the questions to come. But that will have a direct impact on people and the households that we serve. And so we have to monitor that really, really carefully and understand then, as soon as we can get those programmes increased and as soon as we have the budget to do so, that would be our intention. And our hope, obviously, in terms of, and that just gives you a sense of what the scale of funding for affordable warmth and our boiler replacement scheme was last year. And as I said, unfortunately, we've had to suspend that scheme, the boiler replacement scheme, for this year. Affordable warmth, again, a number of changes Which again, I can cover in questions as well, but you will be very aware because affordable warmth is something that we had always delivered jointly. Department for Communities took the decision due to ongoing budget restrictions that it has now moved to a single, or is in the process of moving to a single provider model, whereby the Housing Executive will essentially take over the administration, the entire administration of the affordable warmth scheme. We have and are beginning already to see a growth in the number of people ringing, calling our advice line in relation to that, and that will be made if that number is a free phone number and is available to all of you. But just to give reassurance that that is the main change in the scheme, both the level of grant has not changed per and also the kind of the eligibility has not changed either. So while there are changes to the administration, hopefully the customers themselves won't see too much of an impact. That said, capital funding for affordable warmth is extremely tight this year, and so again I expect to see a reduction in the number of overall grants that we're able to make this year. Again, happy to come back to that. On waiting lists, and again, I won't be telling you anything you don't already know, because this is part and parcel of your work and ours, is responding to ongoing demand. The overall growth, by the way, just recently in the waiting list is 19% growth in the last 5 years. So that's across the entirety of all 11 council areas. But you'll see the waiting list trends here continuing to rise. And also you will see the number of allocations that we're able to make have remained low because there's very little churn. Effectively, tenants, and I'm pleased to say tenants are happy to stay as tenants and want to stay as tenants at the Housing Executive. And so the number of allocations that we're able to make in terms of our own stock and churn in our own stock is relatively low. So look, you know, I've said it before and you will all say it to me this evening, the answer to this and the solution to this is more new build social housing, and that remains our goal and our objective. And that brings me on actually to, I'll come on to the new build programme, last year's new build programme, and we'll also talk about this year's too. But before I do that, just to touch on what was an issue we talked about last year, but it has without question the growth in the number of people in need of temporary accommodation has now hit, and I think is now a systemic and I would say a permanent change since COVID. What we saw was a trebling in the number of people who applied for temporary accommodation from 3,000 placements a year to about 9,000. That's now hit the 10,000 mark. So that's a regional figure. But what effectively we are seeing is people that we already had a legal duty to provide them with temporary accommodation are now asking for that duty to be met. So that isn't necessarily a growth in the number of people presenting, although in some areas there is a small growth. It really is the people that we already had an obligation to coming to us to say, I can no longer, our informal arrangements no longer work. So whether that's sofa surfing or living with family, potentially living in overcrowded conditions, is just not is sustainable. So as you'll see, that has meant our temporary accommodation budget has absolutely soared, and so, you know, very unfortunately spending more than 23 million on temporary accommodation, it's unheard of, quite frankly, for us to be spending that amount. What we really want to be doing is spending that on prevention, and we know that's what works, and we are funding expensive temporary accommodation just simply because of the scale of demand. But again, happy to come back to you just to talk more about that if you'd like me to. Onto what was effectively a very positive year last year, 22-23, for new build. And I think to pay credit to this council and to officers, I think we are beginning to see and have seen the fruits now of a number of years of very, very, very strong partnership working, both in terms of the development of the local development plan, our ongoing work around housing action and looking at where the sites are readily available, bringing forward sites, our placemaking, place shaping teams working very closely. So last year in 22-23, 188 starts across council area, and 631 new social homes under construction at the end of March 23. So that is an active programme. It's still not what we wanted to be. It's still not where we needed to be in terms of meeting overall need. And you will certainly raise that point with me, I'm sure, and we're very aware of that. But in terms of seeing now a real uptake and a pick up in the number of new starts, is really, really good to see. But we need to build on that. We need to do and continue to do better. And there's a number of pieces of work ongoing locally, which again, we can talk about just to show
how we want to build on that together. And that will give you, as I say, some examples there, Craigmoray and Down Hospital, on some of the of new build on site in the last year. And we hope to see much more of that in the future. Just before I finish up, just to kind of go through some of the big housing challenges, I've talked about temporary accommodation and our increasing reliance on temporary accommodation, but particularly because we've effectively run out of what we call our standard single lets for temporary accommodation, we've had to now rely really in an unprecedented level on non-standard accommodation. So that means placing people in hotels and B&Bs. We don't want to do that. We certainly are of the view as housing professionals that is not, those placements should only be made as a last resort and for very short periods of time. It is unfortunately the case, given the scale of demand for temporary accommodation, that we are placing more people in hotels for longer periods. But we still very much take the view that it should only be done as a last resort. And certainly when there are children, it should only be done for very short periods because of the impact it has on health and well-being and all of the issues that you will know as well as I. We have, as I mentioned already, the numbers on the waiting list and the numbers in housing stress. And as I say, with just over 340 social housing allocations last year, you know, again, that all of that points to what you would expect, which is very high levels of need. In terms of as a landlord, we have a very large investment requirement for our stock. It's an aging stock. The housing executive is 50 years old, and you know, and there's a cycle of investment that you will be well aware of. So we have an investment requirement of 123,000 per home, and that means to meet that we need to be spending about £4,000 per annum on each property. Now it doesn't work in that way because you don't smooth it on an annual basis. Obviously, if you have to, for example, maintain a roof or replace a roof, that's a big investment in 1 year. But nevertheless, that's why our planned and response maintenance work is so important. That first of all we're funding it, but also that we're able to fund it. And there is a major gap, a big gap, as you well know, between what we have in our reserves and what we need in the longer term. That said, for what is, I think, a number of very challenging parts of my presentation, there remain some very large opportunities, I believe, and we believe. First of all, we have completed now more than 1,300 retrofits across, in our existing stock. So that's getting 1,300 homes, and that's a reasonable figure, up to much, much higher standards of energy efficiency. And that has the potential to be hugely important, not just economically and environmentally, but also for local supply chains and so on. So we see that as a huge opportunity and the potential to scale up. And as a landlord of our size, we have certainly learned a huge amount about the procurement and the contracting and the delivery of energy efficiency and retrofit schemes. And I think it puts us in a very strong position, hopefully when ministers return and are making decisions on capital programmes, that retrofitting social housing stock in this council area will be, I hope, a priority. And that, as I say, would have a major impact on jobs and supply chains. We also have significant, and we talk about what's coming up this autumn, but we have significant new work being approved across our stock. So interestingly, this time last year when I was with you, some of the challenges that we had in terms of procurement and contracts and delivery were just emerging. Actually, I certainly believe that we're coming out of much of the real challenges there. There will still be significant challenges for contractors where there are price spikes and when we begin to see inflation rising again. But nevertheless, we're in a much better position than we were certainly this time last year. And we expect to see £250 million worth of new work approved and starting in this autumn. And again, that's a regional figure. So we can extrapolate that for this council, and happy to share those figures with you. We have a new modern methods of construction pilot. So again, investing now in the types of new technology for housing that we're going to need in the future. And we are making good progress on getting to a position whereby the housing executive as a landlord will be able to borrow against its future rental income to start to build new social housing. That's certainly a number of years away, but nevertheless, progress is taking place. We're also proactively looking for new partnerships on homelessness. We've had a major partnership with the Royal Foundation called Homewards, which is looking at systems change and doing that work on prevention that I was talking about earlier. So you'd be glad to hear that's my last slide. Essentially, our role here is to work in partnership with you. Again, very, very grateful to the work that we undertake with you as elected members, with officers. And really, I think our focus is very similar. It is about investing in communities, ensuring that we have
the right level of investment being invested in the right way in our homes and in our communities, but also then pointing to the future and making sure that we are getting new supply up as much as we can. And I'm very happy to obviously to take questions. My colleagues are here as well. Sure, yes, it will indeed. So John McCartney, many of you know, is here, and Liam Gunn also here, and Sinead Collins is also here, and my colleague Roisin as well, who works on affordable warmth. And there's a number of colleagues online. I can't see them all, but I can bring them in as and when we need them. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that presentation. Do any members have? Are we going to John? Sorry, does anybody any questions? If you just indicate in the chat there. Councillor Savage.
Yes, Chair, thanks very much. And thank you for such a detailed presentation. Look, there's been so much pride, so much progress made, particularly since the collaboration has taken place since we got the change in council policy around planning and we got the conferences going. But this on all fronts looks like a battle that we're really, really struggling to win, despite some great strides. I would hate to have seen the position we'd be in if we hadn't made those strides in recent years. At the coalface and what I do on a daily basis, the biggest challenge that I can see and the biggest explosion that I can see is reflected in your figures today, and that's in relation to the temporary accommodation. The temporary accommodation challenge is huge. We have a lot of challenges coming out of COVID. We have a lot of familial breakups, a lot of mental health issues out there, and we need resources on a cross-departmental basis to try and deal with that prevention, or at least try and hold firm in relation to trying to keep the family unit together, if possible, under the one roof. I know in a lot of cases that's not possible. There's been such a breakdown. And I've witnessed the challenges that we face to try and get those members of households housed. I think we need to start looking at, you know, and I raised this before in council, where we try to look at in extenuating circumstances, take exceptional measures. And, you know, I had a long conversation about 18 months ago with Lou McCarry, who in Scotland, or over in Stoke, had looked at developing pods in a industrial unit for temporary accommodation, particularly for single unit lets, whereby people who are coming through with addiction issues have been victims of familial breakup, have been isolated from family or mental health issues. They were housed in an industrial unit that effectively glamping pods were used, and each person got an address. There was a main meeting area in it that the statutory bodies could come. Everybody had an address to apply for a job, and the statutory support people in relation to mental health, in relation to careers advice, in relation to counselling, were all there and able to offer, I believe, very, very solid support to those people and give them the lift up that they needed to eventually move on to permanent accommodation. In some cases, it would have led to reparation of the damage that had been done with relationships as well. So, you know, I think we need to start looking at those short-term measures, because such is the level of the crisis. When we're sitting across Northern Ireland looking at 10,000, we are potentially at the point of no return if we don't do something outside the box. And I believe maybe we need to start looking at those short-term measures that could alleviate potentially some of the pressures there. Maybe we have two-bed units, temporary units going that could have done for small families that have maybe been used up based on people who've been on the list for a long time. So I believe there is a need to look at some form of a unique strategy to deal with the temporary housing crisis. All it does is buy us time. But we need time, because at the moment the system is so badly choked that we have nowhere to move people onto. So at least if we have somewhere that somebody can call home, I don't believe it's the right place to put somebody who has an addiction issue or mental health issue into a hostel. I think it's the most, potentially in some cases, the worst environment you could put them into. But I know your teams work so hard to get people housed that they're left with no option on a daily basis. And I really feel for your staff who are trying to house people with an impossible ask. And I really believe that maybe at the next housing conference, we should look specifically at what are the short term measures that we can take, similar to what was done in Stoke, and look at other case studies and see can we come up with short term measures for temporary accommodation that go beyond putting people in hotels and bed and breakfast, but give people somewhere that they have their own address, a place they can call home, and give them a bit of dignity in the short term until we start to win this battle to get the units that we very badly need. But, you know, I want to commend all the housing executive staff for the manner in which I would deal with, they would deal with me on a day-to-day basis. They go the extra mile in extenuating the difficult circumstances to house people. I don't know how some of them do their jobs, but you can be very proud of the staff that you have here locally and be very proud of what's been achieved in terribly difficult circumstances, both from a budgeting perspective and coming out of COVID and the challenges that that has faced. But my gut feel very strongly is that we need to do something outside the box on the temporary accommodation model. Thank you.
Thank you. Just to say briefly, and just to say, yes, I am very proud of the teams locally and extremely grateful for the work that they do and does go above and beyond what is effectively a really, really challenging and difficult and unprecedentedly challenging, because we came out of a pandemic into an economic shock effectively that we're now seeing, as you said. So just a few things to say. I mean, first of all, we are fortunate in having been able to attain significant increases in temporary accommodation, both in terms of single lets, and we acquire those from landlords where we lease them on a long lease, on block booking system or on a long lease. So relative to elsewhere, we actually use comparatively less hotel and bed and breakfast accommodation. But that said, that is only down to either our ability to acquire it if it's available locally. And there are weeks when that works and there are weeks where it doesn't. And, you know, just anecdotally, we often get quoted, you know, unbelievably expensive prices for hotel accommodation. So you're absolutely right, Councillor Savage. This is not, you know, this is not a sustainable solution at all. So just to give some reassurance, we are looking at a number of ways in which we can acquire ourselves as a housing executive properties, which would be my preference, because we are a landlord and we manage, and I'd rather we lease and manage, or own and manage, or build and manage, and that certainly would be my preferred direction of travel. So we're looking at a number of options there. We're certainly looking at a number of options through our partnerships, and I think that model of having on-site support, essentially wraparound support, is available in a number of areas. But we essentially, you know, what this has done, what the sheer pace of growth and demand has done, is we've eaten into all of that demand now. And so you know, so I think we don't disagree in terms of the need for really innovative solutions as quickly as we can.
Okay, thank you, Councillor McMurray.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. It's always very interesting to hear. And again, just want to reiterate what Councillor Savage said as well, just in regards to the helpfulness of the staff. And they're always more than approachable and helpful and quick to get back in on a matter of issues. I suppose really, and Councillor Savage touched on this as well, and as we generally do in council from time to time, regarding mental health and strategies that deal with it. I was just wondering, you know, as councillors, sometimes we might be in the receiving call of somebody that maybe is well, I'm truthfully speaking from my own experience here, just over just the weekend there, you know, maybe someone not quite in distress, but maybe, you know, a few text messages and maybe it would have been in this, you know, something. So is there, I mean, are your tenants, is there an aspect of the housing executive that that deals with that tenants can phone, or likewise, again, sometimes we don't always have the answers, but sometimes we can help signpost. I mean, is there something there that we can help signpost within the NIHE? If there is, apologies if it already isn't, it's been circulated, but if it could be circulated and there was such a thing, I'd be most grateful. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Andy. Thank you. Yes, I mean, we would obviously through the local office, and you know, we will work closely with any customer or tenant that you feel we need to contact. And equally, we will. I mean, we're, you know, as housing professionals, we will be aware of where our limitations are, but we're certainly very happy and will always signpost colleagues. Liam, I don't know if there's anything you want to add to that.
Yeah, absolutely. We would link it with a number of floating support providers locally, some of which would specialise in mental health issues and so forth, you know, and we have strong collaborations around that as well. We're very conscious that, you know, a lot of the time when people are coming through our doors, the lack of a roof over their head is only one element of their issues, and there are other sort of aspects to their lives that need our support. So, yep, we're very good around trying to work with colleagues, and we get excellent support from mental health providers, floating support organisations and so forth, all with a view to trying to help people deal with their issues and sustain their tenancies.
Okay, thank you. Aoife, Councillor Finnegan.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks very much for the presentation. I suppose I want to start off by giving a particular thanks to Liam Gunn and Niall Fitzpatrick, who I deal with on a daily basis. They're very, very supportive, certainly in the South Armagh area, and I don't think we could do without them. So just a particular thanks to them. I have actually submitted my questions. Some of them are a bit parochial, but I'll belt away anyway. I suppose just in the, whenever I just, Councillor Savage was speaking about temporary accommodation, and I know from dealing with constituents who have found themselves in the situation that they're in dire straits, absolutely need temporary accommodation, and I don't actually know if there is temporary accommodation in South Armagh itself, but we are always being directed to Newry or Belfast, and more commonly Belfast, and that's just not feasible for people in the South Armagh area. Certainly when you're, you know, need your support system and all of that around you. So that's one thing. Look, I don't want to keep you all day about going through all the questions, but I'll just ask you them all at once, but I do think they've been submitted. So do you want to take them all at once, or?
Yep. Happy.
Okay. Okay, thanks. So the boiler and window replacement schemes for the housing executive seems to be delayed by many years now, specifically in this area of South Armagh. People are living in homes with single glazed wooden frame windows, and this is, I feel, totally unacceptable. And tenants are suffering as a result. Boilers are beyond repair, and I can give examples of houses with boilers not working on request. And coming into the winter months are very scary for those affected and needs resolved as soon as possible. I also would like a time frame in when we think that can be done, because I know that there's people on the list over 2 years waiting on those works to take place. And I suppose it's a general maintenance. You know, the maintenance people that are coming out are fantastic, but I suppose there's a delay in the work that's being done. Next is what's being done by the lack of social housing in South Armagh, particularly here in the Cross. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, Councillor, I don't want to break your word there, but all your questions have been submitted in, and I think what they're going to do is email you directly out with all the responses, unless there's something specific you wanted answered this evening.
Okay, so I'm happy enough for the more localised ones. So I have the questions in about Newton Hammond and all, but I would like that answered about the time frame in terms of the window scheme and the lack of housing in South Armagh, because there was just in the Cross McGlen area there were 7 sites identified, and I don't know if have the private landlords been approached, and if so, what was the feedback? And just lastly, what's the plan for the delivery of the affordable warmth scheme? How do you envisage it moving from council to the housing executive? And do you expect any difficulties in delivering this important scheme? Do you think it'll be delivered as seamlessly as the council has done for all those years? And I think that is us in terms of the rest. I'm happy enough for it to be emailed to me if that's okay. Thank you.
Yes, just go with the generalised ones that the team are happy enough to give you a response, and then any of the specific ones will be emailed out to Aoife. Okay, so I'll hand it back over to Grania.
Thank you, Councillor Finnegan, and I do have all of the detail here in front of me, so we can send that on to you literally tomorrow in relation to both the double glazing programme, just to give you an overview of the programme itself, how many homes we've covered and what's to come. I can give you an outline also of
some of the more recent delays. So I'm certainly happy to write to you on that. And obviously we're proactively working with contractors where we have one particular appointed contractor who was appointed, we procured, has been appointed and has now raised concerns on the cost of window production. And so we are in negotiation with them. So that is deeply unhelpful from our point of view as a landlord, deeply unhelpful because we then have to go and speak with tenants who are expecting when we give timeframes for those timeframes to be met. But my colleagues are here and have, you know, I mean, I see it all of the time when, not all of the time, but I see it far too regularly. I understand the challenges for contractors, but when they tender for when they bid for a tender only to be appointed and then to come back and try to negotiate prices, it really does oftentimes lead to delays, and some of those delays are now building up. So look, I can give you the specifics of some of those, but the general issues around, in particular, windows, we've certainly seen delays due to contractors seeking to renegotiate costs after having been appointed. Just to touch on the point about temporary accommodation, I absolutely take the point, and in a way it comes back to the very early conversations too. It would have been very, very unusual, as we all know, even 3 or 4 years ago, for temporary accommodation to be required in some areas. And so in situations like that, we tended to have a fairly ready supply of flats or accommodation, or indeed our own stock. And it's really since the pandemic that we've begun to see a need for temporary accommodation at scale. So we are now looking at a range of measures, including, as I said earlier, the Housing Executive acquiring properties on the market. That will require departmental agreement, so we're not there yet. But also looking at, and we're always keen to speak to any landlord who would like to speak to us who has properties and would be interested in us leasing those properties. So we are always looking at, and we'll continue to look at, opportunities in terms of bringing new stock. I should have said earlier as well, we've also brought some of our own stock back into use. We have very few voids as a landlord, as you will know. Our properties are only void for a reason if they're going to be refurbished. And we have actually paused some refurbishment programmes to bring some stock back into use for a short period of time. But we thought that would be a short period of time. And here we are 2-3 years later, unfortunately still needing that. So it's an ongoing issue in relation to that. In social housing, I'll cover this in my response to you, but there's a number of pieces of work ongoing in relation to Cross and Glen. There's one transfer scheme, but that's for a complex needs unit. Again, I'll cover this in my response to you, so that I can certainly cover the activity that's ongoing in relation to some of those areas. In relation to Camlow, which is 9 units on site, I'll cover all of those in my response to you so you can see it. I'm happy then for you to follow up. Hope that's sufficient for now.
Okay.
The affordable warmth. So, the change to the affordable warmth scheme, and my colleague Roisin is here, essentially it is an administrative change, and what we're trying to do is for the customer to see very little difference, okay? So up until, you know, essentially 1st of September, the process would have been that the customer would have the customer application would have been referred to the Housing Executive from Council. So it came into Council, came across to us, and then our role was to administer that, to do the assessment, to understand the scale and the nature of the grant that's required, and to go out and do the assessment into the property, and then ensure all the approvals were in place. The main change essentially will be that councils will no longer essentially be part of the application process. The application process will be led by us. Is that the best way for me to describe it, Roisin? So really, the key change to the customer will be that they will come directly to the Housing Executive now rather than to Council. But all of the other stages in that process will be exactly the same. So I suppose what's important for you to understand this evening, and we will certainly follow up, is that you have ready access for your constituents and for any applicants who inquire to that free phone number. These are energy advisors that work on our energy advice service, so they are used to giving energy advice and used to giving advice. And that free phone number is available, and we can share it this evening, and we can certainly make that available to all of you so that it makes that a much more seamless process. But, you know, to answer your question, you know, this is a decision taken by the department. It did all happen very quickly in a very tight budget scenario. So I would like to say that we will make it this as seamless a transition as possible. But the most important thing, I think, is that customers have ready access to that advice line, which they will do. And we will make that available. The other big change, again, is that it's not a targeted scheme.
So again, in the past, the scheme was essentially a scheme whereby it was targeted at specific house types, specific geographical areas. Essentially, the targeting has now been removed. Now, the eligibility rules haven't changed, but it does mean essentially that there will be households that that maybe in the past would not have been part of that cohort that might have been targeted for affordable warmth. So it will open it. It will potentially open it wider. So that will probably lead to higher levels of demand for the scheme, and it'll be our job then essentially to manage that demand. And my colleague Roisin is overseeing that and is doing the wonderful work of making sure that we have the resources in place to do that. So I'm very happy again to take any questions or indeed to follow up on any of that.
No, very happy. Thanks a million for that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Aoife. I just wanted to ask a question. I think you sort of covered it in regards to any derelict housing executive properties, but you did say there that there's very little of that at the minute. I suppose I'm thinking, you know, if there's something sitting empty, then try to get it to the space where somebody like a tenant can use it. But you have covered that off, so you don't think there's too many in that bracket?
Yeah, so we're an 83,500 home landlord. We have less than 1% voids. Our voids are really, really low for that reason. And essentially demand for social housing stuff for public housing, which is the housing executive, far exceeds supply. So we will only have stock that is void if it's planned either demolition or refurbishment, and we keep that as low as possible. We have had obviously a number of instances where our change of tenancies, the length of time to change tenancies has lengthened, but again that's for a range of reasons, either issues with contractors or indeed within our own DLO, which we've worked through, and again our change of tenancy timeframes are coming down. I have made a number of requests of housing associations that they bring their voids forward. I would be very keen to see opportunities to first of all identify housing association voids and to give us an opportunity at the Strategic Housing Authority to use those voids. We started that those discussions last year after Russia invaded Ukraine, and we were part of the group of organisations developing the Ukraine resettlement programme. But you know, it remains that demand is exceeding supply. So we need to have, you know, again, I would be very keen to see more voids coming forward there too.
Okay, thanks. And then just Liam had touched on it briefly there in regards to sustaining tenancies, and we all know obviously if you have a secure roof over your head that can help with mental health and addiction and any, you know, maybe family problems and stuff. But where do you see the challenges coming forward now with the change to the discretionary housing payment, and what support will you be able to provide to your tenants? I suppose like for some people to lose that, well, for most people who are going to be on the breadline already, which is why they're qualifying for it, but for them to lose that and them not being able to manage. So I know you've talked about the wraparound support, and I know you do offer financial advice, but there's going to be a tsunami of people affected here. And what can you do as an organisation to secure their tenancy and not, I suppose, be in the position where you're going to be handing out eviction notices and things like that? I'd also just touch on the fact that I totally understand that you would be going out to private landlords to get emergency accommodation, but in the loop of the people that I deal with, what is happening is some landlords are evicting their long-term tenants in order to avail of a higher rental income from the housing executive, which it blows my mind, because we're going round in an absolute circle here where somebody is being evicted from a long-term rent because the landlord knows they can get into emergency space there, and then they're probably ending up then coming to us looking for temporary accommodation, which is mad when you think about it. So I can see the rationale for wanting more, but we could find ourselves in a very tricky situation there as well, where landlords sort of catch on and that they are able to manipulate that system a wee bit.
Okay, so there's quite a lot there, but I think just first of all to say, in terms of sustaining tenancies, I mean, there's a number of Burndale project being a really good example of a fantastic programme locally, which has led to, you know, outstanding results in terms of sustaining tenancies, and we've invested heavily in that and have continued to do so. I'm very proud of that project. We all are as a team. In terms of our own tenants, if we start there first, our own tenants always, I mean, our view is, as a landlord, we will only ever evict in a handful of circumstances. It is by exception, and it is absolutely as a last resort. The numbers of evictions by the housing executive in terms of our own tenants are a handful literally annually. And the reason for that is our tenants tend to engage at the earliest possible opportunities when they get into rent arrears. We've got brilliant teams both locally and centrally that manage our income collection teams, that work very closely with tenants, that understand how easy it is to get into financial hardship, often outside of our own control. And so our job is to work with tenants to as they build up rent arrears, to work through that and allow long-term repayment schemes and so on. So that is a very effective way, effectively, of preventing evictions and preventing homelessness. So that's our own work that we do as a landlord, and we stand by that, and it's something that we continue to do, and lots of hard work happens locally. Outside of our own tenants, however, obviously then we have the statutory obligation for people who come to us who are homeless. We've seen a very severe growth in the numbers of people who are presenting as homeless because they've lost their tenants in the private rented sector. So it's as you said. But just to be clear, when we are working with landlords and approaching landlords on a long-term lease, we will only work with landlords whereby we are absolutely clear that entering into that lease would not lead to somebody becoming homeless. So we would be really, really clear on that basis, and we're very clear both in terms of the way, the nature and the way in which we would make those arrangements with landlords. So we're, it's one of the first questions we will ask, is this a tenanted property? So we would be very clear about that.
Thank you. Councillor Clark?
Thanks, Chair. I'm sorry I missed the first part of the presentation. But first of all, I'd like to thank the Housing Executive, the local team, you know, led by Liam, you know, for all the help they give us as councillors throughout the year. They are very, you know, diligent. You know, always get back to us as soon as possible. It might not be the answer we always want, but they do get back. So I'd like to put that on record. Just to say, it is a chronic situation, the housing situation we find ourselves in, particularly my home area is Newcastle. And one of the biggest issues that I face on a daily basis is in regards to people seeking suitable accommodation. I think you can see the figures, 3,885, you know, applicants on the waiting list. You know, they're individuals. You know, they've got all issues. And some of these people have been on the waiting list for years and years and years, you know. They're in maybe some of them in sort of temporary accommodations or private rents. Some of them are not in the best of condition, not suitable to the person's needs, damp, cold, a lot of, you know, mould on the walls. And the tenant finds themselves in the situation where if they complain, you know, they would end up homeless on the streets. So there's a sort of reluctance even to make complaints in regards to the accommodation that people find themselves in. Just to maybe get an understanding of your experience as well, is that how you would see it? I would agree with Una, but you know, the discretionary payment will have big impacts moving forward. I think we'll see a definite increase in people being homeless. Again, the amounts of rents that there are being charged now at the minute, this will put people into, you know, financial dire straits. They won't be able to make ends meet, and they will have to give up these tenancies. And then as Una says, then the rent will be increased and somebody else will take the tenancy on, or they'll go to Airbnb, which we're seeing more frequently, in our area, that, people, long-term people, even in private rent, are being asked to leave the premises, either for the resale or to let out as an Airbnb. You know, we're seeing that, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know, but there has to be a balance in regards to that. Maybe a question for Liam is, you know, in regards to the Burndale Park, Bracken Avenue refurbishment, you know, when will the date be given for these units to be let out, you know, to give to tenants and take some of the pressure off? Because there's a lot of them boarded up in them areas, you know. There's different issues, I understand that. And probably in connection with that is the CCTV then for these apartments in them areas or flats in them areas and the wraparound services that go with that. Have we a date when that's going to happen? So they are sort of connected, Chair. Just the usual, Liam, again, is the alleyways at the back of the Burndale and Bracken Avenue and stuff like that. You know, can the housing executive ensure that all there are alleyways with the responsibility, along with council. Council are to blame as well, you know, but with the continuous problem with these alleyways, we've you know, series of side meetings. Everybody's going to do everything. But in the end of it, the alleyways aren't cleaned, you know, so the council and the housing secretary need to get together and ensure that these alleyways are free from debris, which are attracting rats and whatever, you know. There's trees growing out of, you know, railings. You know, this goes on every year, and we never seem to get to the bottom of it, you know. That's an issue I have. In regards to Michael's touch on as well, in regards to, and so did Aoife as well, in regards to temporary accommodation, people with, you know, severe mental health issues leaving their support units, having to travel to Ballymena and Ballymena, Derry or whatever, you know, they haven't got that support around them. So they're not going to be, you know, get back to a health and well-being in that sort of circumstances. And it's not all the housing executive's responsibility, I understand that. But there needs to be some solution on a local basis. You know, we've plenty of units, even on a short-term basis, probably in likes of Newcastle, particularly during winter months, which maybe could be available outside of, you know, hotels and B&Bs. I don't think that's suitable accommodation either. But it is an opportunity, maybe look at the providers, maybe look in that short-term contract to see people through to until they do get accommodation. And just as, and it's not a housing executive responsibility, is that, you know, the lack of housing in the Newcastle area, we are, housing trust is developing on the Dundrum Road, a number of two bedroom units. They were meant to be allocated in the spring, and now the building has stopped on that accommodation, and contractors have left the site. You contact the trust, you don't get much information out of them also. But just where is that at, and why is that the situation? Is that because there's no executive to get the additional funds? You know, because obviously building costs have all went up since the contractor probably procured that tender. Is it because there's no minister in place to allocate additional funds to allow them developments to take place? And that's me, Chair. Sure. Thank you.
Thanks, Wally. Can you help me take some of the more local issues, and I'll touch on the temporary accommodation? Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Clark. Yeah, just touching on a few of the issues raised there. Firstly, in relation to the voids in the Burndale there, and obviously this sort of goes back to the pilot tenancy sustainment scheme that we had in the fire damage block in the corner. You'd know it very well, where we put in the wraparound services and daily tenancy sustainment, and that has worked very well, as you know. And on the back of that, we made the case to the Board of the Housing Executive for a significant expansion of that scheme throughout South Down. And I'm very pleased to say that we've secured funding in the region of close to £1 million to expand that scheme to different parts of the council area. And we're looking forward to that starting soon. A contract was out for tender there, and I think the outcome will be known in the next week or so. So in relation to a number of the units that aren't yet occupied in the Burndale, they form an early part of the expansion of the scheme. My colleague, Brona McGorian, has already looked at pre-allocating those, and they should be occupied, we would imagine, over the next couple of months, and very much along the models of the successful tenancy sustainment scheme, with that support in there to help people maintain independent living. So that will see positive impacts on the ground very soon in the area. In relation to the CCTV scheme, that's currently, and it's a source of frustration for all of us really, but it's caught up in the current procurement cycle of the Housing Executive, and the current position would be it is making progress towards getting on site. I had hoped, being quite honest with you, that we might have been able to get on site this summer. I think realistically, just with the current issues there, it might be the early part of next year. But that scheme is something that I've brought forward, you know, based on my time in North Belfast, would have seen work very successfully in blocks of flats and so forth. So I'm sorry that we have this delay, but it will certainly be completed, I would hope, in the next 9 months or so. And I think that'll be, you know, fantastic for people in terms of dealing with sort of fear of crime issues and everything else that would maybe go in areas where there have been problems with antisocial behaviour. So again, hopefully we'll have that on site in the early part of the new year. I note your comments in relation to the alleyways there. I have a chat with our grounds manager, Neil Andrews, there. We'll maybe take a wee chase out. And if you want to have a site meeting there, we'd be more than welcome to add you into that, Councillor Clark. But I'll get a run out with the grounds manager, and we'll just try and see what sort of issues are there, what needs to be done, you know. And in relation to the housing new build, that's one of the housing association new builds in the Drum Road there. Yep, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think my colleague Sinead might have some information on that, if I can pass to Sinead there.
Good evening. Yeah, we've two schemes on site at the minute, one at Central Promenade in Newcastle and the other in Dundrum Road, as you've outlined. That's with Arbor at the minute. I can chase them for an update to see why that is stalled and come back to you on that one. In addition, we have letters of support given out for other apartment schemes in the Newcastle area. It is a difficult area to get schemes on site. There's a lot of competition from the private sector, and obviously there's physical constraints with Newcastle, but we recognise that and the growing need, and we have a site identification programme, a site identification study programmed for next year, where we're going to have an unconstrained look at all available land across Newcastle to try and encourage some further housing association activity in the area. But I'll come back to you on the Dundrum Road scheme.
That's great. Thanks, Sinead, and thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Willie. With three more members looking to come in, Councillor Riley, Bowsey and Lewis. Do you want to put them all together or an answer at the end? But that's it, okay? Yeah. Okay, go on ahead there, Councillor Riley. Councillor Riley, are you still with us? So we'll skip over to Councillor Bowsey and then we'll come back to Henry. Oh, you're there. Hello? Do you want to go ahead, Councillor Bowsey? Oh, every time I say that, he comes back on.
I don't think.
We're going to put you out and bring you in again, Henry, to get a better signal. And we'll go over to Councillor Bowsey and then come back to you, okay?
Thank you, Hello. Chair. Thank you, Miss Long, and your team for being with us this evening and giving a succinct breakdown on the current state of play in NIHE. You've already answered a lot of pertinent questions already. My question isn't really a strictly housing stress issue, but concerns an NIHE asset that has been left to fall into disrepair, and that, as you are well aware of, is the magnificent Martin Memorial Clock in Strigley, which is over 150 years old. You're aware of a report that states that it would take close to £300,000 to repair the clock, which is money, as you've told me in recent years, NIHE doesn't have in the face of the pressures that you've outlined, which I can't argue with. However, there are pots of money out there that can be spent on listed heritage that could never be spent on housing stock. And I would just encourage then the housing executive to do all it can to, as the owner of that asset, to find the necessary funds before the last remaining Victorian clock in that area collapses. Having said that, I would like to commend NIHE for applying to the British government for the Levelling Up Fund that would have restored the clock tower. Sadly, as you know, it was unsuccessful, but I do appreciate you working with our DUP MLAs in Strangford to make that application. But we can't give up on this piece of heritage, and so my question is, what further action can be taken to find the funding to restore the Martin Memorial Clock? It means a lot to the people of Strigley, and its investment would have many social benefits for the NIHE tenants in Strigley that otherwise have very little services invested into them. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bowsley. And just again to reiterate, we were obviously disappointed we didn't receive funding through the Levelling Up Fund. We've also looked at the possibility, for example, of Peace Plus funding. We're not clear or sure that that would necessarily be available to us given eligibility criteria. We have, obviously, Liam has written to elected representatives locally to gauge interest in a meeting between the Shringley Restoration Committee and the Hans Sloane Centre, and we will sit down and possibly look at other options. So we're not, we haven't given up on this one. There is a limited number, obviously, of funding pots for heritage of this nature. I think that says probably a lot about heritage and the amount of work we need to do. But look, as you know, we're happy to continue to look at options and look at opportunities.
Thank you.
Thanks, Granny. We've lost Councillor Riley, who's going to email in his question directly. And Councillor Lewis, then, finally.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to all the members of the House Executive who are here tonight, and especially to Liam and his team for the work that you do and your team does. It's always appreciated. I would just like to ask a question in regards to the testing of the demand for social and affordable homes. I'm aware that there was one there that was run in Spa, which is in an the Slieve Croob area. It was just to sort of kind of have a handle on how many of those were being run across the district, and what would the timescale be that you're starting to see sizable data comments from those, and how you are going to use those to formulate the plan.
Schneider, you cover that one. Thank you.
Housing need has obviously risen right across the district, and particularly in rural areas. We're well aware of the need in Castlewellan and across Gower, across McLean, Saintfield, Ostrava, Camlan, Ardglass. And we're working with the housing associations to encourage activity in those areas. But there's other areas where we might not have as much of a waiting list, but we're aware that, you know, if there's no housing available, then people might not necessarily come forward to put their name down. So last year we undertook a rural housing need test in Leitrim, and that was relatively successful. We had a lot of people coming forward, and we're currently working with the housing associations to investigate taking forward a suitable site for housing in that area. And this year we've undertaken, we have set out to undertake further tests, including Spa and Killeen. So, I mean, we will work with the communities there to encourage people, anybody in need of a home, to come forward and to register on the waiting list for social housing. And should the waiting list increase, then we will encourage housing associations, both directly and through the commissioning prospectus, to extend their site investigation studies and to come up with sites in those areas. You know, we'll look at the need for affordable housing as well as social housing, and encourage housing associations to do their best to come up with something there.
Okay, thank you. Just one final question and then we can wrap up the meeting. Councillor O'Hare.
Yep, thank you, Chair. I just have a question about the co-ownership scheme. That there's details of it included in your report under strategic priority number one. The details tell us that the plan was to deliver over 4,000 shared ownership homes across the north, but only 715 were delivered and only 31 in this council area. I was just wondering, do you know why the uptake is so low? I see there's 145 million allocated, and obviously that wasn't spent then.
I think I'm going to follow up with you directly on that, because I'm not sure that original figure is correct. So, and I don't mean that you've got the wrong, it may be that the wrong figure is in there. So just
To be, and I will follow up with you directly, Councillor O'Hare, on that one. Thank you. So co-ownership is the shared ownership model. We're not involved in the funding of co-ownership. It's funded directly through Department for Communities. So it's not that particular product or model that you're asking about. It may be shared housing, which is obviously the shared housing model that we deliver in partnership with the Department for Communities. But if you're content, I will check those numbers, just make sure that I understand what the issue is, and then I'll follow up. I'll write to you directly on it. You're content. It's over here.
Okay. Thank you.
So I don't see any other members looking to come in. I think we've covered a good broad base of information there as well. So unless you want to come back in with anything.
Just to thank all of you. And as I said at the start, we very much work in partnership, and just to thank elected representatives, elected members and the Office of the Council as well, who we work very closely with, and very grateful for that. And I'm very conscious, even last year, we didn't talk about temporary accommodation as much as we did tonight. And I think that shows how much has changed. It may well be worth, as a follow-up, just with officers maybe spending some time thinking about if there are ways in which you could work with us to maybe identify if there are opportunities in the local area, whether it's housing associations or private landlords. I don't want to be here next year with the same numbers, quite frankly. I know you don't want me to be either, so that might be a useful follow-up from tonight.
No, I think that's a good action to take out of tonight. And I know I would speak for all elected reps and saying housing is probably one of the number one issues that comes to any of our doors on a daily basis. So really appreciate all the work that you do as a team across the district. It's not gone unnoticed. Mm-hmm. And thanks very much for your time this evening.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, everybody. Have a nice evening.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair.